have been in the position I'm in, not in this position, but as secretary for campus ministry. I've got to quit saying that. They've changed our titles. We are now campus. I'm now the campus ministry counselor. They've removed all the secretary.
I know my place recently to the Lutheran annual secretary.
Yes. Yeah, just last month.
Do we ask why, or is there, I mean, is there any reason for it, like changing the Board of Higher Education Services to whatever it is, and back again, and all that good stuff?
No, it's just what happens in the church. But the term secretary, I know when I received the call 10 years ago, I had served as a campus pastor at the University of Wyoming, in Laramie, Wyoming, for 18 years. And when I received this call to serve as secretary for campus ministry, there were a lot of my students have said, who wanted that explained, you know, explain it. Secretary, so I tried to do something very common, like for the Secretary of State, for example. I was the Secretary of Campus Ministry. They didn't buy that either, but nevertheless. I spent my entire ministry in the state of Wyoming. I was born and raised in Michigan. And my dad was a pastor up near Traverse City. Actually, in a little town called Leland.
Oh, yeah.
You know where that is?
Right in there, yeah.
I think a pastor named Butler is there now. I bet that's his name. My grandfather was pastor in that same congregation also, 1900, approximately. So those are my roots. We look at campus ministry, and that's what we want to talk about here, and we go till 1:30, is that what? Still after, you know, things that thinned out in the cafeteria or the snack bar or whatever. Not that long?
Not quite.
Well, then you better get to it then. Seriously.
About 11:50.
11:50.
Seriously.
Oh, seriously.
It is serious.
Oh.
He's hungry.
No, yeah, right.
Well, that pig out there under the awning isn't going to be, is it that direction? Isn't going to be ready this noon.
No, it's midnight.
Oh, okay. All right. That's a lot of place.
Yeah.
Big roasts and everything. How would you define a university campus? How would you describe it? If you, and most of you came through, quote, the system. But
well, I came from an incredibly, incredibly diverse campus.
Yeah.
Probably one of the most diverse campuses in the United States.
What do you mean by diverse?
You have every type of walk of life, every type of political view, every type of hairstyle, every type of ethnic person. I met and became friends with quite a few black people, oriental people, Indian culture people. It was fascinating to learn from them, their way of life. And then you have a large, what I would call maybe not necessarily punk crowd, but of a different kind of antagonistic type of spirit to them, and that was quite flourishing. You would see quite a few wild hair colors and styles of dress, and just the whole gamut. It was there, and what you, if you had something that you stood for, you would have a rally for it, and if you stood for something, there's probably another 100 people that would stand for it, because that would only still be 0.5% of the population of the student body. So you could really get your voice heard in almost anything. You get a lot of, in terms of religion, you get a lot of, you've probably heard of Sister Cindy or
Brother Jed.
Preaching on college campuses, yeah. And they get quite an audience. For me, it's very damaging to hear them. It's really, really sad to see what they're doing.
Which is worse, though, Jim Baker or Featherston?
I don't know. They're both not working for the kingdom, for sure. But, and then as far as campus ministry at the University of Minnesota, campus crusade, InterVarsity, every type of Christian campus organization is there. Fellowship of Christian Athletes, I was very involved with myself. A lot of campus churches. You get exposed to a lot. I thought it was a very healthy experience for me.
Now, from what he described, is there any difference in your own educational experience?
From a Concordia?
Yeah.
I think you could see the contrast with Kirk and I, between Concordia and Auburn, University of Michigan, right next door. It was a very different experience.
Nevertheless, I hear some of the campus chaplains, and I don't know if Randy Shields, I think, is the new one at Ann Arbor. Dick Flieger at Seward. Rich Claybaker at Concordia St. Paul. I hear men like these saying that our own schools and our own campuses are becoming more and more like the institution you described.
When he was talking about some of the antagonism, I was thinking, you've got that at Concordia St. Paul, the antagonistic spirit, sort of the punkers, you know, and they wouldn't go quite so far out as to dye their hair because it would not be accepted on campus, but the lifestyle was basically the same.
The extremes are gone now, I think. There's still a mainstream effect.
Yeah. But there is a growing non-Lutheran enrollment,
even a lack of spiritual,
or a growing non-Christian. Hey, it's a matter of survival for some of our schools as they try to keep going and pay the bills and so forth. And I think all the Ivy League schools, which started out as religious institutions, really have, well, that's in the far distant past, and all that is left usually is a divinity school of whether it's Yale or Dartmouth or whatever, of some consequence, but really it's become a different institution altogether. And it's a struggle, I think, for us in the church to prevent that from happening in our schools, and I don't know if we're going to be able to do it. I guess what I'm saying is that you won't find in a square foot, if we can put it that way, and the acreages may differ from school to school, but you won't find anywhere else a situation as on a university campus today. The compressed population, you can't put 10, 5, 10, 20, or 50,000 hot-blooded young Americans in one spot without having a very unique, I'm going to use the word culture. The university campus has a culture, generally, all its own, that you have no idea what that is unless you become part of the structure itself or part of the system or become a student there, and then suddenly you're part of it. Now, there is diversity of culture, obviously, in the larger institutions, but nevertheless, I scribbled down a few key words which I hear campus pastors uttering over the course of the school year, and the first one I have down is 70%. 70%. What they mean by that is the typical or average university population today, and that may vary obviously from school to school, is just about 70% unchurched. I don't know whether you would dispute that or not, whether you would at the University of Minnesota or at the University of Michigan.
Right. That seems surprisingly low to me.
That's what I was thinking.
Well, you can say unchurched. 70%. Unchurched, does that mean?
Does it mean they don't go on Christmas and Easter?
Does it mean that they're not regular? If they're not regular attenders, probably are.
They're not affiliated with the congregation in church.
Yeah. Regular attenders are much lower.
70% unchurched is higher than the average of the society.
Yeah. Probably that much
at our
synodical
schools.
I know Austin, there was much more than half of the school was commuters from the Austin community.
Yeah.
People that couldn't get into UT and stuff.
Yeah. What I'm saying then is that the university campus today is a mission field like you wouldn't believe. And it's probably as difficult a mission field as there is today. I really commiserate with our campus pastors. I don't like to get down in the trenches, in a sense, and be that sorry for ourselves, but it is a difficult ministry. One of our campus pastors just recently said, I think I know now what it must be like to be a foreign missionary. And he was thinking in terms of receiving a call which would send him to a new field, Sri Lanka, for example, or, well, we can't send more missionaries there now, but any place where we are beginning new work, or where we're beginning at square one, John. He said, the university where I am, he said, is really that pagan, is the word he used. He said, it really is incredible. It's mind-boggling. So when they say 70% on church, they have a field. Traditionally in the church, we have always thought in terms of campus ministry as being a mission of the church. That's why I'm accountable to the Board for Mission Services in the Senate. That's where we're structured. Campus ministry in each district comes under the purview of the mission board of the district. The call to Ed Proust at the University of Michigan came from the mission board, together with input from the students, the student council, particularly. But I say that because other denominations don't have the same philosophy that we do in that sense. Even our fellow Lutherans operate a little differently. In the new church, the new emerging church, ELCA, the campus ministry will be placed under the Board for Higher Education, as we would identify it. They're not under the mission program of the church. So traditionally, and I think actually, we have always thought in terms of our campus pastors as being missionaries. In a situation such as you've been called to, John, your ministry will be subsidized heavily by the Southern District. And the Lord blessing your work, you will probably, I don't know how they've outlined this, whether you've even seen the documents yet, whether this will be. You see, there are differing models in campus ministry as well, and it depends upon local circumstances to a great deal. In the Southern District, you have primarily what we call town gown. I think I wrote that down also. Town gown ministries. Are you familiar with the term town gown? Town dash gown. It means that there is a congregation there, and the congregation has taken upon itself, hopefully that's where it came from, to assume the responsibility for outreach on a particular campus in its, within its boundaries, or on its turf. I don't know if they still say that anymore, but it serves the town, the community of the town itself, and it serves the academic, or the gown, the cap and gown community. So hopefully it becomes a blend of ministry. That probably is becoming more and more the predominant model for us in the Synod, and that's largely due to, I think, economics more than anything else. In an all-student operation, such as at LSU, traditionally has been, and University of Minnesota, University of Michigan, well, we have about 60, 65 all-student assemblies, as we call them, or all-student operations. They're heavily subsidized. They are viewed by the supporting district as a mission. It'll never be self-supporting. That's a given. And when I say that, that's where we're vulnerable, because campus ministry receives one of the biggest slices of the pie when it comes to the mission dollars of the district. And every time there is a shortfall, whether it's Michigan District or any other district, campus ministry gets looked at very, very carefully, and oftentimes some restructuring goes on. At Eastern Michigan, which is right next door to Ann Arbor, they never did fill that position with a full-time campus pastor after he's in Ludington now. Oh, no.
Beyer.
Yeah, Bob Beyer. After he left, they put a part-time person in there, in Dr. Dykstra, Jerry Dykstra. And I think they've also had a lay worker from the school, from Concordia, assisting in the past as well. But that's a matter of economics again. Or, let me also point out, when I say it's difficult ministry, if... let's use LSU, Louisiana State University, John, in the situation to which you've been called. Dave Lang, who has been there, I think, 17 years as a Missouri Synod campus pastor, has elected with his people to leave the Synod and join the new Pershing Church. So that group which he has...
Oh, now I understand.
What's that?
Well, President Meyer didn't really tell me the details.
I will tell you lots of
Thank
details.
You.
Who will he, by the way?
Yeah, we didn't have time.
Yeah. Oh, I'm actually very covetous. Because anytime you are called to a situation like that where you have a building, property, and it's vacant, it's just sitting there, John, waiting. There's nobody there. But you have this nice building, nice chapel. Campus center complex right on the...
Oh, it's a church and chapel?
It has a chapel and... Well, it's one building. There are facilities.
The congregation just vacated it, basically.
And how many, after 17 years, do you think Dave Lang was able to pull together on a regular basis and have followed him out of the Synod? Do you have any idea?
10?
50. That's the number we were given. About 50 people. That seems incredible, doesn't it? After 50 years of work, now we're getting back into the foreign field, aren't we? Many of our foreign missionaries are much more successful than that. This is difficult work. And in many ways, it's like ministering... I shouldn't probably...
He was working with the campus, wasn't he?
No, exclusively with the campus. Uh-huh. Yeah. This was an all-student operation. And yet, over the years, there were a number of people who had their communicant membership there. Some are still students. It's a natural psychological thing, I think. You were expressing your attachment to Warren Jornby. Mm-hmm. We relate to people. That's normal, don't we?
Right.
We develop loyalties to one another. So when things change, we've got to make a decision. And some of these people at LSU had graduated, have found employment in the Baton Rouge community, and continued to worship there as a campus chapel. That happens frequently all over the place. And these are the people then who still are there, who will move, who did move. The last service was held on Easter Sunday. And on Easter Sunday, they went from the chapel about a quarter of a mile, maybe it's not that far, down the street, about a quarter of a mile, I think, to the Episcopal Chapel and Campus Center, mm-hmm. instead of chapel.
That's interesting. There's an Episcopal Chapel where the ALC moved after the
In fact, National Lutheran Campus Ministry, this summer we'll have a joint conference between National Lutheran Campus Ministry and the National Episcopalian Campus Ministry staff at St. Paul, the University of Minnesota, St. Paul.
Did this type of thing happen at any of the other schools?
No. It has happened. University of California at Berkeley.
They call that arrangement between the Lutheran and Episcopal the Ludicus agreement.
That's good. Yeah. You've got to be a Norwegian or a Swede to understand that,
yeah.
Ludicus. I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Very good.
At
Hanover, the congregation there left the Synod. There are a number of those. In several instances, like at Dartmouth and at California, unfortunately, we lost. I mean, they took the property with them. They were an organized congregation. If they're a student assembly, they're not a voting congregation or franchised, and the title is always held by the district. And we have encouraged all of our districts to follow the same procedure as a protection. Because the district itself has a tremendous financial investment, usually in our campus properties. They're very expensive locations to begin with. And at LSU, by the way, all those churches have built their campus centers and chapels on university property on a, I think it's a 99-year lease arrangement. It's, but they don't, they own the buildings, or their building, but they don't own the property on which it's constructed. Kind of interesting.
And they're on year 98 right now.
But that's a beautiful campus, really is. So there are all student assemblies, there are town gown ministries. Terry Poole in Omaha has a model that's quite unusual. That's, we call it a metropolitan campus ministry. I don't know those of you who are at Seward ever got up to Omaha or ever may have met to Dave Carrett when he was there, and Terry Poole, who's there now. Terry serves three institutions primarily. There are over 100,000 students in the greater Omaha area. He serves Creighton, which is a Roman Catholic school. He serves UNO, University of Nebraska, Omaha, and he serves the Medical Center, University of Nebraska Medical Center. And those are three big institutions. University of Nebraska, Omaha has about 15,000 students. At least they did it 2 years ago, yeah. And no dormitories.
Right, all commuters.
All commuters. It's like ministering to a parade, or trying to minister to a parade. By that, you literally are running alongside this movement of human beings and trying to do ministry at the same time. It's a little awkward, but it happens. And it takes a special breed of cat to do one like Terry Poole does in Omaha. In fact, we don't have many of those. National Lutheran Campus Ministry seems to be more successful and determined to do that model than we do. Our district mission boards want to see evidence. I mean, they're not interested in, and that's another word I have down here, they're not interested in a presence ministry, a ministry of presence. They just don't want to have you set up to rent an office someplace and set up shop in that way. We have a philosophy of doing ministry, of campus ministry in the Synod, which we flat out call Word and Sacrament campus ministry. Your task will be, what will John's task be at LSU? I mean, he's at square one. There is nothing there that I am aware of. In fact, let's help him get started. I think that'd be kind of unique. What should he do first, do you think?
Identify if there is some reserves in the
room. Go to the local church.
Now, this is a good point. To see, first of all, whether there is any kind of a list available. And there is. I think Cindy Beck, who has been a lay worker there 2 years, I think she's going to stay till the 1st of June, 1st of July. But she says there are 300 and some names they have on their mailing list that they're going to be happy to share, to give you a copy of all those names, or whoever this new pastor was going to be. So that's very important, that you have something. But you, hey, listen, if you are called to any parish, it is not unusual to get there and discover, even though this is a typical, regular congregation, there ain't no list.
Yeah.
And you don't know who your members are, because they haven't done a very good job of bookkeeping. I don't know if it still happens, unfortunately. That happened to me. And it took, the elder said, well, we're working on it. I said, well, how far along are you? And they said, well, give us a couple months yet. I said, a couple months to know who my people are? But you learn to know them because they came to church. And that's another thing we'll mention to John. We as Lutheran Christians are worship-oriented, aren't we? When the campus ministry had its beginning at the University of Wisconsin in 1920, the pastor assigned to begin the work there, Adolf Henschel, German name. His first program activity to which he invited people, and you got to have something if you want to bite people. You all come. That's say that in the South. You all come. Just like Southern Franco. The first thing he invited them to attend was a church service. That's what he put on his posters and his publicity. He had rented an upper room. I thought that was kind of neat. over a store or something in downtown Madison near the campus. As I recall, there were about 45 students who attended his first worship service. But that's what we have going for us. We are worship-oriented, and this is important for us. And students who are committed, and I'm going to say that right away too, even though it's a very difficult ministry, it's a very exciting, dynamic, fun ministry because the people you work with are generally the committed ones. There is no greater volunteer type of ministry on the part of students than campus ministry. they don't got to go to church. They don't have to become involved. I mean, they have their home churches. They can say, yeah, I get home once a month or whatever. They don't. So the ones who are going to respond, John, to your ministry at LSU are those who love their Jesus, their Lord, who are going to be working with the committed ones, and that's exciting. If you have two, where two or three,
right.
Whatever, whoever responds is going to be generally committed to the Lord, and that's something we've got going for us. It's unfortunate, however, that all 384, or whatever is on that list, won't show up. We used to get regularly the printout from data processing at the University of Wyoming with the information we had requested all across the page, which included also their home address, whether they were married or single. Close to 600 names. I always felt, why don't they just show up the very first Sunday of the school year? Well, we wouldn't have room for them. Obviously, our chapel only seated about 200, but
it's rush time. Everything else is going on.
Yeah. We celebrated the fact that we got to know half the people on that list during the course of the school year. Many of them responded and became the heart and core of your ministry. They were the elected officers. I think we still traditionally say of a kind of an average congregation, we break it up into thirds, don't we? Or don't you? Aren't you taught that anymore? A third is the active group. A third, you see, now and then, they don't want to really get too involved. If you celebrate it if they come to church on Sunday morning, but don't ask me to do anything else, Pastor. And another third, their names on the list, and you're constantly working on them. They may not have been to communion for a couple of years, and the elders are still working. What are you going to do with them? Are you going to cut them off? Are you going to, you know, that's the other third. In a way, that's true in every other situation. It's true in campus ministry as well. But I say generally, we get to work with the good ones, the committed ones. Those are the ones who respond because of such a voluntary nature. Now, John, you're going to have to help that process along. If you get six people to respond, they're going to have to reach out. And that's what campus ministry is all about, too. It's establishing linkages. It's establishing, it's helping people in ministry. You see, students, and you are students and have gone through this, students move in a world where the pastor will never enter, will never get inside, in a sense. For me to engage in conversation with someone who discovers I'm a pastor, and you'll experience the same thing, the defense mechanisms. Sometimes it's like an iron curtain that literally drops, and that's
That's it. Some are very, very open. Don't waste my time, but ask your questions and let's get on with it and move on. But student to student is oftentimes far more open and honest than pastor to student. I think you understand that. So you become a trainer, the equipper of those who respond to your ministry. And you become involved in ministry together. And the more students who become involved, the more your hands literally are multiplied and the ministry is multiplied. And that's very important. Well, we've established that John should get the publicity out, get the list of names.
Is a mailing effective? Or are there other ways that are more effective?
Do you like to get mail?
Yeah, but you separate your mail into stuff that says resident or whatever, or
occupant
type stuff, or something that looks like junk mail and that's not personal, and the personal stuff.
But if you have the name,
if you have a computer, you can make each one more personal.
Sure.
Without much trouble.
You're going to want to call on as many of those persons.
Right, I think somehow personal contacts
on the phone would
somehow have to be made, not just a letter.
Yeah. When are you going down?
I don't know. They said August, but I think I'm going to have to get there in July.
I don't know what kind of information is provided you, Stuker.
I hope not.
I don't know what information is provided by the university. By the way, some universities won't even accommodate the gathering of religious preference data like that, so you're out. But apparently LSU does. But some schools are really distressing. We're trying to minister to the same people, in a sense, to work with the same people. And we're trying to do this as mainline denominations, and we lean on that pretty hard, in a way that will build the moral character of the university in a very positive way. And yet, in some places, they shut us off at the pass and won't accommodate the gathering. It has to be voluntarily given, that religious preference information. It's certainly not 100%, but if the university will simply allow it to happen, usually you get pretty good input, and that we're grateful for any little thing. Some universities have a very involved orientation program during the summer. At the University of Wyoming, we as campus pastors were allowed to participate, to set up tables, and one of us, and we all took turns, one of us represented all the campus pastors, got to address the summer orientation programs. When you get names of students who haven't even arrived on campus yet, there you can send out a letter of welcome, inviting them, telling them about service and your facilities and a little bit about yourself and your program, and you get a head start. So it isn't anything unusual that you will be doing. It's the common sense things that you would do, I guess, anywhere. But I wouldn't discount or discredit any strategy, even stuffing the mailbox. Most universities will allow you to use campus mail at no charge. There are some who won't, but I don't. You may have to find that out at LSU. So if people are living in dorms, you can take the 12 letters for those people who are in this particular dorm and ask them at the desk whether they'll put these in the boxes, and normally they will. Or you can take them to the to the university post office, and they'll distribute them that way. You have to find out what's accommodated.
I have a question on this type of situation, and it's going to be happening all over with all the other different kind of congregations, but is there going to be like hostility, say, between the group that left this church, school, parish, and them, or do you think there's going to be any, do you personally think that this church is going to help?
You see, the Southern District has worked hard at accommodating this group. It's not a closed shop or a legalistic operation. I don't know how else to describe it. Dave himself is a trained clinical psychologist who has negotiated with the district, Dave Lang, the former pastor. He's been a worker priest for the last few years. He negotiated with after he got his PhD, he hung out his shingle in a negotiated way. First, I think it was quarter time, then he went to half time, then he went three-quarter time, and as of 1st of July, he's leaving the other ministry. He's not going to serve as the pastor there anymore either. He's going to become a full-time psychologist. His partner in his practice happens to be the campus ministry at that Episcopal Chapel and Campus Center. Now, I don't know whether he's doing the same thing or not, but they have their own private practice, and apparently it's doing very well that they feel that they want to pursue it. There's a great need for Christian psychologists, but Dave is a very open person, so it's going to, in answer to your question, the group left of its own volition. They were not forced to leave. They just felt that they would be more comfortable, and that it's an honest decision, and we don't fault the 30-some campus pastors since 1974, who have left the Missouri Synod to join the other Lutheran churches, either AELC or ALC or LCA. There have been in campus ministry some who, in all honesty, should have left, who continued to stay in the Synod, who fought the Synod at every turn, which I thought was a dishonest. There's a certain dishonesty, I think, in having your hand out to take your check every month, and with the other hand, you've got you're doing everything you can to discredit your church body. So when a decision of conscience is made, and Dave is a churchman, you will have no problems in your day-to-day life. I don't question that decision. That's an honest conscience decision, and we let it go at that. And there are many in other Lutheran churches who are our friends. We don't have any problems with that. We know what our confessional position is in our church body and what we stand for. But that doesn't mean that we're going to isolate ourselves to the point that we become so sectarian that we can't even walk down the sidewalk together. That's kind of ridiculous. Yes.
I was thinking something that he might try. It might be a lot of work. It might even be futile. But if you have the names of the students that are coming down there, you might possibly have their home congregations and contact their home pastors, find out a little bit about them, and have that pastor encouraging their parishioner to attend the university chapel or whatever such you have.
Mailing to the whole district. A mailing list, and the district office can help you in that. We'll help to identify who you are and your ministry.
Sure.
That's in order. That's a good point. Anything you can do to become known. I always encourage our campus pastors, attend every Winkle conference, every pastoral conference that you can. You've got to be known, because in the measure in which you are known and trusted, they'll encourage their young people to participate in your ministry.
Is there any difference, just a quick question, in receptivity or hostility of making calls on a campus than there is in the normal community? About the same kind of thing, like if you're making evangelism calls on a campus, or is not that the mode of operation?
Some universities won't let you go door-to-door in the dorms. Some universities will. Now, you mentioned parachurch groups before. Kind of have ruined it for the rest of us. on some university campuses because universities have finally said no religious calling in the dorm. You just can't. You can make appointments if you know the person. You can call and say, could I meet you in the lobby downstairs in the dorm? That's permissible, but you can't go room to room. You can go to a room by invitation if the person invites you to the room. So it varies from place to place.
I was just going to point out a good thing that I think the Campus Crusade does is they'll publicize a big event, and then so they get 500 people to come there, and then at the end of the event, they'll ask people if they choose to put their name on a piece of paper and there's something that they would want to discuss in their religious life, and then somebody will be in contact with them. And it's usually a student who will call them up and they'll get together.
Yeah, those are divvied up then, those pieces of paper. Or another strategy they use is take surveys. They'll stop somebody on the campus and ask whether they would
fill out
would take 5 minutes to fill out a survey, but that's usually a religious survey. It's like canvassing in a neighborhood. And oftentimes you run across people that way. John, Louisiana State on this is number 32. These are foreign students in U.S. institutions in the school year 85-86. And you'll notice up there, there were this last year 343,777. I don't know, or don't recall what the dominant group is, but it's quite a group. It's 1,864 students, foreign students, international students at LSU. That's a mission field all its own. It's really fantastic. Where have they come from? If you'll notice on toward the bottom on the right, I went through the list quickly with Dr. Westcott's assistance, and of the 65 nations listed there, there are 20, as I recall, that are closed nations where no missionary can enter. 4, India. Number 6, Iran. Number 7, China. Number 11, Indonesia. Number 12, Lebanon. Number 14, Thailand. Number 15, Saudi Arabia. 16, Jordan. 19, Pakistan. 25, Kuwait. 27, Vietnam. 30, Turkey. 31, Egypt, just in that column alone. And there are students at our universities everywhere. I don't care where you go, you can find, you have them on your own campuses.
You
had them in Ann Arbor, I bet you, at Seward. Yeah, they are there. And we are missing the boat when we don't become acquainted with them and become friends with them. That's our... You have a video here someplace that I provided for you, and you also have this manual. I brought this along for Vicki Jameson. She wanted a copy. You should have this someplace. Where do you keep your supplies?
Professor Kavinsky's
in his office. Well, if you haven't seen that videotape which we did last year on ministry with international students, it's called "A Stranger in Our Midst," of the young girl from Lebanon who enrolled at the University of Wisconsin. It kind of follows her experience. Really, a neat story. Got to meet her finally last summer. In August. I don't think she's a Christian yet, but I kidded her. She better watch it. She's attending church far too often. She's a real vivacious person. The Holy Spirit's going to get her. So take a look at that. If you haven't seen that video, I think you'd enjoy seeing it, especially John and Jorgen, if you haven't seen it yet. Dr. Buckman from Keeping After School. When Maurice Deshaun was here from Lebanon, he got kind of excited that there still are a lot of Arab students in this country and said, if you want some assistance for materials, let me send you a catalog. So here come two big boxes of these. It's Arabic on one side and English. That beats German anyway. German on one side, English on the other. But put those with the library, or give them to Dr. or Professor Trubisky also. I don't know what else I'm going to do. Do you get at the library? I don't know if the library gets interconnections or not, our campus ministry resource packet. Are you familiar with this, interconnections? Do you get it? Anybody else on the mailing list?
Is Professor K on your mailing list?
I think so. I'm not certain.
We're kind of struggling because we'd like to expand into this, you know, keep this as our room. But the library says that they want to, they've got their eye on expanding themselves. You know, we'd like to get ourselves established in here. So we're just kind of homeless. You know, this is on loan, basically.
Next week we're meeting in Rob's dorm.
We're having our annual campus ministry conference here on campus during finals. From May 18 to May 21. So, everybody who's anybody in campus ministry will be here.
Better be here.
So, attend some of the sessions. Surely, Judy just told me this morning, we're not going to be able to use SEEK Hall because all you guys need to get over there and do finals. So, we're going to have all our sessions, I understand, in Pritzlaff. I don't know how this is going to work. But they're going to take the furniture, are they taking it out or just moving it? They're going to put tables up the long way. So they're going to have a church growth conference here with 106 registrants next week, so they'll know better how it's going to work. But I don't particularly like the long.
Yeah.
All you see is the backs of heads. And our guys like to discuss. But we should, if we're anything like last year, should have about 120 people here. I've rambled, but I hope I gave you a taste of something.
I have a question as far as how irritated do campus pastors get with some of the other campus ministries where they just kind of fill up their soapbox and start their street preaching, you know?
Hey, it's free country.
Yeah, but I mean, is it a real cause for irritation? Or it doesn't hurt the credibility of, say, a more mainline campus ministry.
Well,
because you were talking about
there are
just any brother.
Yeah, there are students who are perceptive and who know the difference. There are some who don't, obviously, and who will judge all of Christianity by Jim Baker, or whoever it happens to be, unfortunately. Maybe that's what they want to do. It helps them with their own feelings of guilt for whatever. But generally, I think you're dealing with a more perceptive group that understands this whole principle of religious pluralism, that our country is founded on the principles of religious freedom. And that when you have 250 or better religious denominations in this country all doing their own thing, they recognize this. We do in our own denomination, and we try to be respectful of others who believe and teach and have a creedal position that's their own. And we try not to make fun or put down or whatever. It's far better to be positive in our dealings with others than negative.
Before you go, can you explain a little bit about this organization that just got started up in January?
The new student organization?
The replacement for Gamma Delta, I believe.
Well, I don't know if it'll ever replace Gamma Delta. Gamma Delta was an organization from 1934 to 1968. This new student organization, I don't think they brought along the preliminary draft of their guidelines, but we've had two meetings now. We, meaning a student steering committee and the campus ministry standing committee. And we've just mailed out a preliminary draft of the guidelines to all the campus ministries asking for a student reaction. We all need, I think, to network, and students feel the need of this particularly. We'd like to know what other students are doing and thinking. And if we can accommodate that, we'll have made a big step. Some regions of the country have always done this. They've had joint retreats with half a dozen other campus ministries because they're logistically arranged nicely and can do this. I think the first retreat district-wide was held in the Southern District this February, if I'm not mistaken. And they had about 70 students from all the town-gone ministries in the district. Brian Runge is a man who, maybe some of you know Brian. He graduated, he's been out, from St. Louis here 2 years. He's at the University of Mississippi in Oxford. He has regularly about 35 in church. About 7 or 8 students. The town gone has a beautiful chapel, just beautiful. But there ain't many Lutherans down there.
No, there are.
Can I quickly give you an illustration about what I mean? At Ole Miss, there are 9,400 students. And Brian says, we estimate, because the university won't give us religious preference information, our estimates are that there are about 90 pan-Lutheran, all Lutheran students at Ole Miss, 90. I just did a review evaluation of a ministry at the University of Wisconsin in Stevens Point. And same number of students, 9,400. You have any idea how many Lutherans?
6,000.
Just about 2,000. Well, at the University of Minnesota and Duluth, there are it's almost half of a 7,500 member student body, almost half of them. And half the faculty, Lutheran. That's all Lutheran.
And then half of those Scandinavian.
Yeah. But that's not Lutheran territory down there. Now Louisiana is much more Lutheran than Mississippi. New Orleans and Baton Rouge are some strong Lutheran congregations there. But it's interesting. Wherever you go, you will enjoy that kind of experience. And it's fun. So I appreciate the opportunity to come and chat with you. If you come up with a dry run sometime, when we come back, I'll do it.